Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Good, thank you. How you doing, man?
Doing all right, doing all right. It's Marcus and Rabbi from WMMR in Philadelphia.
How's it going, man?
Awesome. How you guys doing?
Good.
Doing great. So we've had a chance to play the new single. The album is dropping tomorrow. Versus your past couple of albums, was this album easier or more difficult to put together as a whole?
I think the recording process was easier because we had been doing a lot of work beforehand, and we had done pre-production with Brendan beforehand before we went in. So going into the studio this time, as opposed to the last album, we went into the studio and we sort of winged it a little bit, man. We had some songs completely unfinished, and the idea was that we'd go in and we'd sort of create them on the fly. Whereas this time, we spent more time finishing those songs beforehand. So when we went into the studio, it was just a question of knocking them out. We were in LA for, I think, a total of 30 days, but we were in studio for a total of 16 days to do the whole thing. So, yeah. I think on that front, we were just well prepared and we sort of went in and knocked it out, yeah.
Excellent. Were there any songs that you put together that when you were doing the recording process, they were just a difficult time to put together, but then in the end, when you listened to them back?
The one song that we had a really hard time with at first was Suffer It All, because it was the one we were least familiar with, and it's the heavier, you know, it's the heavier sort of metal-y riff song, and we hadn't really played that together as a band. So when we went into the studio to record that one, we struggled a little bit because we were still trying to find... Even things as ridiculous as trying to find which tempo it worked at the best. So it was a little frustrating not knowing one song because, honestly, we just overlooked it. We'd worked so hard on the other stuff that we hadn't thought about that one, and we'd forgotten. So when we went into the studio, we actually felt a little unprepared. And I don't like to feel unprepared because Brendan is a pretty much, you know, he's a get-up-and-go kind of guy. So ideally, I'd like to go in and know what I'm supposed to do. So when it's time to do my job, he's happy with me. You know what I mean? But that song, that one definitely took a little bit longer for us to figure out and to put together part-wise and to figure out, was it what we wanted? Which parts to remove? You know, which parts to change? But I think at the end of the day, when it came together, we were pretty happy with it.
Hey, Sean, it's Rabbi. And I know each of the albums you have written so far, there's been a different process. I know you've based a lot of your previous albums on just life experiences in general. How do you feel that when you originally recorded Disclaimer all the way up to now and the album that comes out tomorrow, how do you feel the writing process has either developed stronger or just is there a certain method that you, John and Dale also kind of take to the table and incorporate everything together?
I think the process pretty much has stayed the same. The years have gone by because I'm pretty much, I like to write stuff by myself and work on and have the ideas. You know, that's where the songs start usually. So I start by doing it myself. And then sometimes, you know, we have the time and we have the ability to go into a room together and then write some songs as well. But the bulk of it is because we live so far apart from each other. Like, for example, this last album, I was living in New Hampshire. John lives in Oklahoma City and Dale lives in LA. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult to collaborate on that kind of stuff. But so I also like to do, like I said, I like to write the stuff myself just because initially that's just where I'm most comfortable. And when I'm in the process of trying to come up with new stuff, it's pretty, like I said, it's pretty introspective. So it's a thing where I sit and I usually try and write. The guys only get to hear the stuff that's the strongest of the stuff I write, because there's a lot of stuff that comes out that's rubbish, you know what I mean? I try to minimize that with every process. And I think, for example, this album, I wrote only about 14 song or ideas, and that was it. And then I felt like it was time to go. Whereas before, you know, we've gone as high as saying 30, 40, 50 songs, which makes it more difficult to choose the album track listing. But I think that the process has always been the same, and I, because it's what works for us as a band and what works for me. So I don't want to change that. You know, we don't use outside writers. We don't incorporate somebody else to come in and help us write songs. We've always done everything ourselves, and we're really proud of that. You know, and I think if I, you know, just with the world being what it is and American Idol being such a behemoth, there's this perception that everybody is just a karaoke artist who has a ghostwriter in the background, and that's not the truth. You know what I mean? It's just a process that where I just sit and write and write and write and write, and some days nothing comes out, and other days it'll be this deluge of creativity. But so usually I just keep going until I have, and I go, whoa, how many songs do I have? And I go back and count, and if I feel like we have strong enough stuff, then we'll start talking about actually getting into the studio.
A couple of years ago, I remember one cold night you did an acoustic session for us where you were interviewed by our midday DJ Pierre Robert, and it was released released on CD and DVD. You did a great cover of Pearl Jam's Immortality. I was wondering where you guys came up with the idea to do covers. I know, I'm not sure if it was John or Dale mentioned that they were a big VH1 80s metal hairband classic. And I know you've obviously covered Pearl Jam and a bunch of live songs in concert. And you recently recorded Seether, cover Seether. Where do you guys come up with the ideas for covers? Is it also a collective process?
Yeah, I think what we do is we try to find songs that we all like and bands that we all like. So we've done Alice in Chains, mm-hmm. we've done Pearl Jam, we've done Nirvana, we've done Temple of the Dog. And basically, it's always stuff that we like, you know, that we were influenced by. So it's usually pretty universally mutual as far as, okay, well, we have to, you know, do we feel like doing a cover? Yes, okay, well, what do you guys think? And then we'll sort of throw out a couple of songs. And whatever everyone is excited about or enthusiastic about, we also do a Deftones cover. We do Change in the House of Flies. And I'm a huge Deftones fan, and I think we all are. It's pretty much just play songs that we enjoy to listen to. And that this, unfortunately, there aren't many bands these days that we enjoy to listen to, just because of maybe I'm getting older and I prefer variety in my music. So we've been working on, in fact, we were just working on some stuff recently. We were trying to think of songs to do, and one of the songs we threw out was Failure's Saturday Savior, which is, you know, we also, I think if you can play covers that educate people. For example, the saddest thing I've ever seen is when we played Neil Young and Needle and the Damage Done, and nobody knows what the song is.
Yeah.
And that's sort of, that's pretty heartbreaking when you have this young audience that doesn't know who Neil Young is and just how great his music is. Now, I don't know that if we ever inspired anybody to go out and buy that afterwards, or if somebody was like, man, you know, that song that you guys have, no, it's not our song. You should go check out Neil Young and the rest of his catalog. So I don't know. I think we just try and find stuff that, again, that we enjoy to play and that stuff that we feel emotionally connected to, perhaps. And it's fun. I don't know that I feel like I want to record any more covers, because, you know, we did Seether, obviously, for the Greatest Hits collection, and that was really just a tongue-in-cheek sort of afterthought. Careless Whisper was a complete joke, because we were asked to do a love song for Valentine's Day, so we picked Careless Whisper, because, you know, why not? What is greater than that saxophone solo in that song? I mean, we just try and have fun with it, man. We don't want to have to go and learn a song and spend hours and hours and hours practicing a song just to play it live or to entertain people or myself. We just pick songs that we love and that we all know really well, and that we can pretty much just almost call out from, you know, we can go on stage and be like, hey, do you guys want to play this song? Yeah, sure. We don't have to rehearse it and we don't have to sound check it. So those are the kinds of songs we like to cover, really.
Now, with going back to the new album, the title of the new record is Isolate and Medicate. Where did you come up with the name for the record, and why did you choose that?
It's pretty straightforward, actually. When I was busy writing this album, that's exactly what I was doing. So it's not necessarily an uplifting story, but I was just shutting myself in a darkened room and I was drinking and writing music, you know. And that was what originally inspired the title, but I think now we've changed it to, these are instructions for when you listen to the album. We suggest that you close your eyes, find a room, have a couple drinks, and turn the album up as loud as you can. But ultimately, I try to describe the writing process every time by giving it a title that sort of usually is a little bit more vague, but this time it just felt like that's what I wanted to say. That was the reality, is I couldn't find a better way to say this is what was going on. So and it's a title that tries to sum up the songs and the music on the album. So I think that this was just, it just seemed to me to be the best way to describe everything.
We'll see you on August 26th in Camden, New Jersey, Susquehanna Bank Center on the Uproar Tour. Just wondering, you played a couple of years ago for our big festival, our MMRBQ, over the summer. I'm trying to remember what bands were on. But any good memories of that venue? I think you've been there a couple of times for an MMRBQ.
Yeah. Well, you know, to be honest, we've had a long history with you guys.
Oh, absolutely.
Starting back in, 2003 with Pat Callahan being our guitarist.
Yep.
You know, and us doing One Cold Night there, and Philadelphia's always been pretty welcoming to us, so we've always felt pretty happy and comfortable. Although I will say that we played that one radio show and somebody threw a cup of pee at me.
Really?
I remember that incident.
Oh, wow.
What?
I remember getting really, really angry about that, because some little snot-nosed kid in front of me peed in his beer cup, and then I get hit in the face with this cup, and I'm like, and I lick my lips, I'm like, that's warm and salty. I'm like, somebody just peed on me. So, you know, we can't make everybody happy.
Well, I don't want to bring up bad memories.
Definitely one of the ones that when we play, it's one of the highlights on the tour schedule for us. So we feel like we've had a good relationship with Philadelphia. So they are great, with the exception of that one.
On a non-music note, are you following World Cup?
Dude, I just watched that. Was it yesterday? No, the day before. I watched the Brazil Colombia game. It was insane.
Oh yeah, awesome. did you see any of the games yesterday? Like the Greece game. Greece played with a man up on Costa Rica, and they could only muster a goal and barely tie it up, and then they lost in a shootout. And then the Dutch game yesterday on the penalty kick. Oh my God!
And in fact, I was otherwise engaged. I went and watched my first baseball game yesterday, but I'll tell you about that in a second. Didn't the Netherlands win?
Netherlands won on a penalty kick on a BS call in late extra time. It was total crap. Mexico outplayed them. Mexico has looked really good, as has Costa Rica, with the way they handled Uruguay and Italy.
Yeah. Well, and who just Colombia? Yeah, it was Costa Rica, I think. Or who just went through that? That's never been through to the semifinals in the entire
Costa Rica
career. Yeah, and that was a good game to watch as well.
Yeah,
I must say I was otherwise engaged. I went and watched my first baseball game yesterday, and I was watching Red Sox versus Yankees.
Ooh.
And I'm a Red Sox, dude. I had the whole experience of going to Yankee Stadium, and I know it's not the original one, but yeah. I got a couple of New Yorkers that aren't happy about it. But I went and watched the game, and I got to experience it. I walked out of it a much bigger fan of baseball, and I never really appreciated for what it was. So, and I can proudly say that I've now been to a game, and I've had a hot dog, and I ate yogurt out of a little Yankees helmet. As far as that goes, so back to the soccer though. I'm rooting for Brazil, and actually, to be honest, I do like the Netherlands team, even though I didn't see that game. I guess what bugs me the most about this is how these guys roll around writhing in pain, and then as soon as they get the decision, they jump up and there's nothing wrong with them. You know what I mean? it's like everyone's goal in soccer is to cheat as much as possible. Don't win based purely on the merit of the fact that your team is stronger and more skilled. Yeah. Cheat your way to victory. I mean, we were sitting somewhere. I think we were in France, and we were in a restaurant, and this British guy walked in, and on the TV, some guy was writhing around in pain, and he goes, "Ooh, looks like that guy chipped his nail polish." You know,
that's funny.
I mean, I also played rugby for 11 years, and I played soccer for about 5 or 6. But the rugby players don't roll around like that, man. You take knocks and you get up and you keep going. Whereas in soccer, literally, you can watch you watch the slow-mo replays, and these guys don't even get touched, but then they come up like, "Oh my God, my face just got smashed."
Yeah.
No, that's the part I disagree with, this fake falling around stuff. Yeah. And I really – then you watch some teams that disagree and don't do that. And those are the teams that I'm sort of quite, you know, a fan of. But some of those South American teams tend to be a little dramatic. I don't know. I think it just takes the sportsmanship out of the game. If you're going to lie there and cheat and whine and cry, I just think that, you know, win because you're better, not because your acting skills are superior.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on the diving and all that. It drives me crazy. But when you get those games where you see a lot of that really good skill in the action, like when Cristiano Ronaldo knocked in that pass to tie up the U.S. late in the game, it was like that type of skill is unbelievable to see. So
yeah, and that's the stuff that makes you go, wow, this game actually does have something that I might want to watch.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's inspiring to see a guy really handle a ball like that. I mean, I used to remember watching in the 90s, Diego Maradona was my favorite player. He played for Argentina, and that guy was incredible. The way he could handle a ball, it was like an extension of himself. And when you watch somebody, and I don't care what it is, there might be something I'm not a fan of, but if somebody's skilled at it, it fascinates me because they've obviously put a lot of time and effort, or they were just born with this innate ability to do it. And some of those guys are really incredible. Some of those players are, yeah. I mean, who is it? James from, was it Brazil?
He's, that dude's insane. Lionel Messi from Argentina.
Yeah. And these are the future Pelés and Maradonas of this young generation. So yes, it's exciting to be, I think it's exciting just to watch it. I'm not going to then suddenly spend the rest of the next 3 years and 11 months watching soccer. I'll wait for the next World Cup again.
Well, listen, we know you have more interviews to do. We want to thank you for your time. And we're both going to be up at the Gramercy tomorrow night. So we will see you there.
Yeah.
Cool, guys. I appreciate that. Thank you guys very much.
Hey, awesome. You bet. You have
Thanks
a great
again.
Night, Sean.
You too, man.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.